defensively, I think ultimately Bancole is actually a builder himself and got him the job initially when he's working at that site, building site.
You mean an architect or someone who's an construction engineer?
I think he's just a builder. Right. As a result of, you know, failing in music. He was formerly a musician, then he sort of turned a builder, and he got Brody a job, and therefore Brody returned the favor when he found success with the Harrison character. Right. I didn't have any issue with him. I think he's a very interesting actor who's always interesting on screen, so I didn't have any issue with that. But I can understand sort of the frustration because the screenplay, it's a very sort of functional role.
Together, right? Adrian Brody is shooting. They do get high together, right?
Yeah, yeah. So presumably because of, you know, his sort of experiences within sort of the arts world and the music world, he got the drugs, and then sort of he's the first one to get off the drugs as well. So it's a functional role.
Why does Brady show a scene, a nonverbal, as I recall, of the two of them are kind of just lying in bed together, not lying in any kind of intimate way, but they're just hanging out? What the fuck is that about? That's a stupid scene to throw in. I mean, if they're getting high together, it's just, I didn't understand why we were showing them lying down in bed together, which would some dumb people would think, maybe they're sexual. I didn't get that, but I just couldn't understand why he showed that.
I didn't get that impression either, that theirs was a sexual relationship. It was just, you know, two people sort of getting high, and they had that, they have the intimacy of two people who have sort of, you know, debased themselves in some ways. So, and they have that shared experience. It's all pretty frustrating. In terms of the Oscar race, you've got Adrian Brody, and there is this impression. I know that Jeff Snyder has sort of been banging this drum, basically that Adrian Brody is like the best performance of the year, and maybe even of the decade, and it is the sort of definitive kind of performance, and this is like the critic's choice, as opposed to Ralph Fiennes or Timothée Chalamet. But
where is this consensus? Where are you getting this consensus? I know a lot of people feel that he's quite good and he should be certainly best actor in it, but where are you getting this
That's definitely something that Snyder is saying, but it's
really?
Definitely. And
Jeff Snyder said this in so many words. What, in the last couple of weeks?
Pretty much. He thinks that Conclave is kind of just mediocre, and Ralph Fiennes is okay in it. And I don't know if he's seen Chalamet, but it's just a very but he has that sort of impression of, you know, this is like a Daniel Day-Lewis style great performance that is just so much so far above the rest of the field. But I didn't have that sort of impression at all. I like the performance more than you do, but I think Fiennes is very, very subtle and very interesting and very compelling in Conclave. I think it's a terrific performance. I haven't seen A Complete Unknown, but he's really subtle. He's subtle in a way that Brody isn't.
I really love their two brief moments. When Fiennes, his dialogue is always kept, he's almost whispering his lines for the most part. He certainly never, you know, has a where just goes off emotionally and screams. But he does have two Shakespearean moments, very, very short, very brief. That's when the Mexican cardinal, the cardinal from Kabul, says that I've been voting for you. You have my vote. And Ralph Fiennes, up until that point, has been very controlled and moderated. He says, Find out what your vote.
Yeah.
I love that.
He knows how to go big when it needs to go big. Yeah. He goes big in that that John Lithgow confrontation as well. But he also knows how to just subtly show a kind of emotional reserve or intensity. He just does it with his face, especially that scene where he articulates what his papal name is going to be, and it's just such really rich, subtle acting.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, I'm just crying and I'm just going to overwhelmed by the enormity of life. He's a really fine actor, and he's a terrific theatre actor, and he knows how to play it big when he needs to be big, but he also knows how to act for the camera and for the screen.
Did just you read, by the way, really about Ray Fiennes' performance as the mover and shaker Robert Moses? It was a play that was given way over on the west side outside of Chin Pan Alley, and I was hoping or presuming that someone had taped it and there would be something that could be streamed and I don't think I've heard.
I've seen it. I saw it as part of the NT Live presentation at the local cinema. Basically, I think it might be available for NT Live subscribers.
So it's
National Theatre Live. So they've got a streaming service. What I would recommend is Man and Superman, which I think was also a National Theatre Live presentation, and he's just extraordinary. It's just so funny,
and
it's
streamable right now. You can purchase it.
I think one of them, at least one of them, might be streamable. They regularly update their streaming, so they show it as theatre productions at cinema, and then sometimes they'll update it on streaming. So you just have to go to National Theatre Live and just have a look and whether or not it's got
productions. I see trailers for it. It was called, by the way, Straight Line Crazy, and it's from 20.
Yeah, it's okay. It's a David Hare production, and it's okay. Okay. As a piece of theatre, as a piece of drama, it's okay.
Now, I love that John Lithgow, just one more of those things, when John Lithgow says to him, your ambition is showing, and it's not a very becoming thing. I think that I shall say that this conversation between us never happened. And he walks off and takes a couple of beats and says, but it has happened!
I think Conclave, I don't understand any sort of criticism for it at all. I think it just perfectly fulfills its contract to be an entertaining thriller. And that's witty, that's clever, that's dry, that has all these twists, and they're all entertaining twists, I think. You know, what it aims to be, I think it succeeds.
When they say, I like popcorn movies, well, this is my kind of popcorn movie. I was really with it. So.
Yeah. Peter, it's weird because it's written by it was adapted by Peter Strahan, the British writer who basically just writes the same, whose best scripts are just basically the same. It's quite remarkable how he sort of twists these stories. Wolf Hall, this, and Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. They're all about middle managers who are sort of in these patriarchal worlds, who have these kind of offsiders who help them and who sort of look like, you know, loyal dogs, but are kind of snakes. It's quite remarkable that he's managed to sort of twist all these stories into this direction. I think it's really good.
Yeah. And by the way, it's something about Corbett's film that I haven't mentioned, that I think there's a reason that many people feel obliged to give him a pass or salute him out of respect, and that's the budget of this film having been
$12 million,
something like that?
Yeah. If I have to hear about the budget one more time. They just, this is the story. This is, there's so many puff pieces. There's so many discussions. For some reason, like, there's this bizarre kind of mentality or within online, which is like, Hollywood is just filled with Hollywood in the studios. They're just laundering money, et cetera, et cetera. Look at this extraordinary thing. You know, I don't really care about what a film's budget is. Yeah. You know, ultimately it has to be on the screen. And to the film's credit, I don't have any issue with the direction. I think the direction is mostly superb. It's mainly the writing that I have an issue with, and and the production design, and it's on the screen, but at a certain point, like, who cares?
Yeah.
I'm not getting paid. You're not getting paid. Yeah, exactly. Why do we care? Mm. The reason why it doesn't cost what it costs is because people are not making the kinds of money. They're not making their quotes.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons.
Yeah.
So why are you cheering this? Bizarre.
Well, you know, I don't have a particular great deal of affection for this film, but I applaud anybody who can bring up something that feels this momentous or pretentious or whatever it is. It feels like a big effort.
It just feels big. Like that sequence where they have the accident with the train, that's enormous. That just feels giant and huge. And that is, to me, like the great scene in the film. Yeah. And it has no actors in it, so that's strange. But it is an extraordinary sequence.
Yeah. Anyway, it is yet to... I don't know if it's playing... It has to be. It opened officially on the 25th. I know it's not playing anywhere out here. I think it must be playing in New York City somewhere. But it's funny how I haven't really heard about many people going to see it. It seems to be a fairly closed audience that has responded to it, and it's my belief that once it starts being spoken about and kicked around a bit more by people in the guilds, the Academy in particular, I don't know that it's going to really have a lot of I don't think it's going to be especially popular as an awards level film. I can understand people believing it should be, and I don't have a huge argument with it. I just don't like it personally, but
it definitely has the.
It's number three on the gatecrashers, the people that we talk to, and they're like, right after that is Emily Perez at number four and Wicked, and then comes A Complete Unknown at six. Here's the odd thing about a Complete Unknown: if I've been reading about it quite constantly, over every day, and many people, they're all saying the same thing, which is that, you know, this is not breaking new ground. This isn't doing anything that really, makes you kind of think twice about Dylan or gives you some insight. It's just a very agreeable film with loads of good music and an excellent performance by Timothée Chalamet. When will you see it, by the way? When is that going to be there?
I think it's out next month or maybe in February. They haven't necessarily prioritized it.
Oh.
Fox/Disney haven't necessarily prioritized it. As a sort of holiday thing. We're getting a lot of the genre films before that. It's weird. I think my sort of, you really liked it. You've always had a let's forget 3:10 to Yuma, but after that, you've had a complicated relationship with James Mangold, because Mangold has appeared on your site and he like yelled at you because you didn't like Logan, and you really didn't like Ford vs. Ferrari, and you sort of liked the Indiana Jones film, which a lot of people didn't like. Which that's the bizarre thing. And then you've sort of come around and you really enjoyed this film. I have complicated feelings about Mangold as a director. Certain points I quite like him. I quite like his simplicity. And at some time and other times, I just think he's kind of the master of the bland, you know, just incredibly overrated, by certain critics.
Well, he sees himself. He's described himself as a kind of a journeyman. He's not really. He doesn't have thematic or he doesn't have a sensibility that is like you know, like Nolan or Michael Mann. He does, but he seems pretty comfortable with being the guy who can nail an Indiana Jones film and then turn around and do something like the Dylan film. I respect that. I think it's okay. I think that he didn't get in the way of Chalamet's performance, and it is a fascinating. It's dense. It's layered. It makes you think about where Dylan was coming from, and it's really a significant accomplishment to make the film as absorbing and watchable as it is, even though the very nature of Bob Dylan is to be elusive and deflecting of any, you know, like when Elle Fanning, as the Susie Rotolo character, getting angry at her and saying, you don't say anything about who you are. It's all, half the stuff you say is bullshit, you know, like you work for the carnival. You're not, you know, you don't talk about base stuff that we all share about where we came from and everything. And his response is, everybody makes up their life. You know, they ignore the stuff that they find uncomfortable, and they just talk about the things that make them comfortable, which resonate with them personally. But that's a really good insight, and the movie is full of little jewels like that. And
do you think Norton and Barbaro have a chance?
I think so, for sure. Or Norton has a chance in the supporting. I mean, he's extremely. You don't never have any problem accepting him and going with him. He's got the whole Pete Seeger voice down. She's very attractive. She doesn't have the voice that Joan Baez had, but she's quite compelling. And I love the moment when she flips him the bird and that animus and calling him an asshole. It's a good character. It's well rounded, well thought out. The only problem, this is, I've got it from some people who saw it on Christmas Day, and I thought it was me, and I want to say, listen, this is. I thought it was striking that the featurettes and a couple of the trailers, you can hear very easily the dialogue, Timothy's dialogue in particular, because he does a lot of muttering and mumbling. But in a theater, I've seen it in two first-rate New York City theaters, one, the Lowe's Lincoln Square, and the second was downtown AMC Kips Bay, and a good-sized IMAX screen, and it doesn't come off as clear. The consonants, the vowels, do not penetrate the way they do digitally, which is interesting. So I'm looking very much forward. This is a wrong way of saying this. I'm really looking forward to seeing the subtitles one of these days. So maybe that'll happen. You know, it seems unfair to you guys for that they would want to delay it for this long. As you say, possibly late January, possibly February. They don't see it. It seems, you know, like they're being, you know, they're not being very gracious in letting you guys share in the reactions to this film.
Dylan isn't necessarily a sort of priority or as big a figure in Australia as he is in the US. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of sort of branding. Ultimately, and this is a bit of a brand film in a way. Is this like easily the best Chalamet performance since Call Me By Your Name?
Yes, without question. But then the thing is, it's just, you can feel, you can sense the investment that he put into, you know, really channeling this guy and really being him, not just acting or sounding like him, but really being him. And I think he's going to win, frankly. I think that people are going to, I don't know if it's going to be a Best Picture thing, maybe because nobody seems to be believing that it's a magnificent film in terms of its content. It's just a very likable film. So I think he's going to probably beat Ralph Fiennes and Adrian Brody. I really do. Because I think, as I've said about the Brutalist, I don't think it's going to sit all that well with a lot of people. I think many people are going to feel as I do. So let's see what happens. But anyway, did you ever see a real pain opened in Australia?
Yeah. I've actually I saw it at the same film festival that I saw The Brutalist, and then I actually saw it again because someone was wanting to see it, and it's really good. Mm-hmm. Again, it doesn't. It's a really good crowd pleasing formula. It's a buddy film, yeah. But it's also sort of weirdly enough snappy entertainment. It's just, it's this Holocaust associated film that is just so entertaining and funny and witty, and you are with these two characters and you like both of them, even though the Culkin character is difficult. But yeah, you know, I think it's pretty freshly made and freshly handled and well directed.
The character played by Kieran Culkin is it's a character that you just know anything. If you know any people who have been like that, you knew them in your youth. He is going to go through a really rough patch when he gets older, and he gets into his 40s, 50s, clearly. And so there's a current about the guy, and you feel like that he could somehow, you know, channel himself and pull his strengths together and not be so impulsive. But it's a sad performance at the end. And I was very kind of moved after the fact when I think about the poor guy. If he keeps doing this and living like this and behaving like this, I've known guys like this, and it does not end well. It doesn't even turn out well when they get older. So, anyway.
And it doesn't even need to hold your hand and declare it. Or, you know, if this was Brady Courbet's A Real Pain, you know, you'd have a speech at the end that just sort of says this is where Culkin is going. But, you know, it just leaves you on a high, and then it just sort of deflates that with that very last sequence or that very last scene or shot. It's a really lovely bit of subtle filmmaking.
And you're describing where he is once again at the airport just checking people
out. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And Culkin just looks so lost and confused, and you know, you just have that sense that he's just never going to get it together.
May I ask? I'm fascinated about what's happening down there. Baby Girl is not streaming or being shown.
No,
nothing.
Okay. No, it's going to be shown at theaters in, I think, February.
Okay.
We've had Substance here for a while. I got a chance to see Hard Truths at the British Film Festival, which is just superb. Have you seen you seen the new Mike Leigh film, Hard Truths?
Oh, you know, I've got it a file, and it's just a matter of watching it. And I very much am looking forward to that performance because I'm persuaded before the fact that she's pretty hardcore and pretty real, and I can't wait to see it.
She absolutely is. It's such an uncomfortable film, but you know, it's such a forceful performance and such an intense performance. Mm. If you think Kieran Culkin's character is difficult, or you know, he is, you know, the best friend you'll ever have, because Marianne Jean-Baptiste is just so striking and intense and just primal. It's just like everything is a source of conflict. Everything is a fight.
Yeah.
Everything is an opportunity for her to get her anger out at the world. I think it's one of the best films about the COVID experience or the post-COVID experience, because it briefly mentions it, but it's so much about what COVID did to us and how it sort of, instead of strengthening certain bonds, just allowed us to escalate our worst tendencies. It's a terrific film. And I think it's often been mentioned how great Marianne Jean-Baptiste is, but the whole cast, it just works as a complete unit, especially Michelle Austin and David Weber. They're just really terrific performances.
Is that the guy who plays her husband, or who is that guy?
David Weber is the husband, and Austin is the sister. They're the primary supporting roles. Justifiably, they would be in contention for supporting nominations, but that's just not how it works with those small films. It's just, this is the actor that we're sort of rallying behind, and that's it. And no one else sort of gets a look in, but they're terrific as well.
You've seen Nora, though, right?
Yeah.
How did you see that? That actually playing down there?
Yeah. That came out on Boxing Day. A pretty strange Boxing Day. Lots of art house films coming out that day. The day after Christmas.
And you call it Boxing Day? B-O-X-I-N-G?
Yeah. I didn't realize that this wasn't a thing in the U.S. yet. I think it's a thing in the U.K. and worldwide as well. Boxing Day, yeah.
And what's the reason for using the word boxing? What's the
I think after everyone is happy with their presence, they're unhappy again, and they start boxing each other. That's the reason why.
Okay, I just learned.
No, I have no idea. Yeah, that's again another terrific film. I think it's a living film.
Yeah,
it's something that stirs something in you, and it doesn't talk down to the audience.
Yeah,
the character just is. Yeah. Another extraordinarily intense and fiery and primal character. She just is, and it doesn't apologize for her at all.
Yeah.
I think it's Sean Baker is a really terrific filmmaker.
It's really like easily the best film he's ever made. And I just can't imagine anyone even thinking with any sincerity that the lead in... So I should say the supporting, but what people are calling the lead role in Amelia Perez, Sofia Gascon, Carla Sofia Gascon,
Carla,
who I think is good, but to compare the two between her and Mikey Madison, or that woman as we were just speaking of in Hard Truth, it seems like...
Yeah, Marianne Trump is, yeah.
Yeah.
It's
Amelia Perez?
Amelia Perez. It had certain screenings, which I saw preview screenings this month, and it's, I think, and actually, I think we're getting it released at theatres before it goes onto Netflix, same with Maria as well. So,
okay.
Yeah, so we're sort of behind in a number of different areas.
So what is it like? What's the weather? The weather is pretty warm down there, right?
It's warm. It's strange because people have this impression that that Australia and Melbourne is just warm all the time, but it's pretty much cold for 9 months in Melbourne, 9 months of the year, and then it's very, very hot. But that's about it.
9 months of the year, Melbourne could be fairly
cold,
described
as
a city that is cold. It just seems so curious. Why would that be?
We're close to the South Pole, and Tasmania, which is south of here, it's much colder than that. So that's the reason. It's only gets hot and warm when you get up north and towards the west. Okay. It's every single country has this image that it creates, and the image that Australia creates is like that of the outback and those films from the 70s and 80s and, Crocodile Dundee
and that wonderful area Walkabout. Where we shoot the jungle movies.
Exactly. So it creates that impression, but it's not like that at all. It's like a lot of other countries, you never see... You never see a metropolitan-based story about Australia. You really only see, out in the outback or something like that, because that's all people are interested in. When international filmmakers...
Due south of Australia, in Melbourne, is Tasmania, and then even farther south, and you have to go a ways to get to the Antarctica. So, it just seems like it's, but I'm very surprised. I just learned something. I didn't realize that it was essentially a chilly climate. So that's unusual.
Yeah.
Have you lived there all your life?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
I've lived in Melbourne all my life, but I've been around the world as opposed to around the country, more specifically Europe, it's a chilly climate. When people come here to shoot films, they want to shoot. They've got cities where they live. Yeah. So they're not interested in city stories. They're interested in the outback, basically.
Mm. Okay. Funny, I've always wanted to visit Australia, and I remember decades ago being affected by the vibe of Melbourne, because many scenes in the Stanley Kramer film On the Beach were shot there.
Yeah.
And I love the whole horse and buggy thing at the train station. Is that something that is kept up, or is that just something that happened 60 or 70 years ago but no longer?
I can't really remember that film. I saw it a while ago.
Horse and buggy, yeah. Being driven around Melbourne.
Oh, no.
No, well, that's too bad. Okay.
It's pretty much just a metropolitan location now. Metropolitan and suburban, basically.
Okay. Well, that's disappointing, because that's a very colorful and attractive thing.
That's globalization. Everything is becoming like everything else.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, well, it's funny when you argue with someone online, or have contrasting opinions. There's always a feeling of a little more feeling of acrimony, a little bit of you don't know what you're talking about. Oh, you're really gone on the wrong path here. And yet, when you talk to somebody on a one-to-one, all that kind of doesn't really manifest. And it's kind of nice to just speak to someone who you've dealt with strictly on a comment basis, as opposed to pure conversation. So it's nice.
That's true, but it also depends on the person as well. I imagine there were certain people on film Twitter that you wouldn't be able to get along with, and that's just the nature of their sort of character.
Yes, but even Glenn Kenny, who's been an animus kind of enemy of mine online, he's not a bad person when you hang with him. He's actually pretty circumspect. He's very
brave. Yeah, that
he knows his stuff.
That is one of the more sort of extraordinary sort of relationships, yours and Glenn Kenny, because you could be just enemies at one stage and friendly at others. That's truly the enemies of love story of film Twitter. Yeah. All right, I think I have to go now, but it was really good speaking with you.
Yeah, let's do it again. I mean, I love hearing anything from insightful people, and I appreciate your getting on and chatting. And I'll tell you what we're going to do. Besides posting on Hollywood Elsewhere, Sasha said let's put it on Gatecrashers also as a kind of a so it'll be on those two sites anyway.
Sounds good.
We'll pop it up tomorrow, and we can we can get into this anytime again. Any you name the topic, and we'll go there. I take it you know your film history, and you're very immersed in many of the older films, right? Or do you consider yourself?
Yeah. You're not talking to Clayton Davis. Yeah.
You actually know about movies made before 1980, let's say.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Clayton, yeah. I'm looking for the name, by the way, I just pulled up a map. And where is that area where they shot the Island of Dr. Moreau and they shot the George
Clooney? It was Queensland. It was definitely...
and that's a big city, right?
That's a state. Queensland is basically like the Florida in more ways than one of Australia. It's basically like a conservative, politically and socially conservative location that has a lot of fun jungle sort of locations for films to shoot in, basically. Right. But if you actually ever going to visit Australia, then I would recommend Brisbane because it's most enjoyable.
Okay, I'll take that advice. All right, man.
Perfect.
Enjoy your day. What time is it down there as we speak right now?
It's 1:30 p.m. at the moment.
Okay. And it is
cool.
9:40 my time. All right. This is fascinating. Very nice to make your personal acquaintance. And
absolutely. Okay,
let's go there again sometime before too long.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Be well.
All right. See ya.
Take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Okay.